All right, this is the Marysville Board of Education regular meeting of September 19th, 2013. Can I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Mabee.
Here.
Mrs. Greer.
Here.
Mrs. Devine.
Here.
Mr. Glassner.
Here.
Mrs. Powers.
Here.
Okay, will you please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right. Next up on the agenda is the adoption of the adoption of the agenda. So, can I have a motion to adopt the agenda, please?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Was there any discussion, changes, alterations, or whatnot about the agenda?
I don't believe it's on the. I believe it's on the printed, but it's not on the actual item. Is the SAC raises? We've taken those off because there needs to be more discussion.
So they're not on our.
It's on the
printed one here for salary change.
It's on the printed one, but it's not on the.
Okay, so for superintendent, human resources, action items, remove
right.
the salary change
yes.
for.
Take SAC off.
Okay. Is there any further changes? Okay, hearing none, then can I get a roll call, please?
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, we have a presentation on our local report card.
I just want to say that Andy had three of us starting this, so focus, because we're going to narrow it down.
We're going to try to do our best.
So we want to go over the new state report card. Last spring, we talked to you about the components. We have a little more information, and so that's what we're going to look at tonight.
And there are multiple components. Right now, only four of those components were being graded on or assessed on, but by 2015, the rest of the components will come into play.
So Brian shows us those.
Yeah, there they are. So.
And so these are all the grade card components, and as you can see, we have a lot more information in some of them, not all of these areas. Mm-hmm. Graduation rate, literacy, prepared for success, achievement, progress, and gap closing, and then we'll receive an overall grade. So right now, they're still gathering some of that. Some of that we don't even have data at all. So we're going to turn that over to somebody else. Okay, Aaron and Jody. This is a well-honed machine.
All right, so as we go into graduation rate, and the biggest thing is that when students come in, that we have to identify what cohort they're with. When they come in as ninth graders, they can only be with us for 4 years. Or if we bring in a student moves into Marysville, we need to look very closely because if we misplace them and put them at a freshman level when really they should have been in with the sophomore cohort, that could cause problems down the road for us because we put them in the wrong cohort. So it's really this four-year graduation rate when we're looking at 2012 graduation because the data is a year in arrears. So we won't be reported on our 2013 graduation rate until the next report card. So we're at 93.5%, which is an A. We're performing well above the state average, but with our comparable districts, as you'll see on the next slide, we have some room for growth. And I think really that's, as we talk about options at the high school, universal interventions in our classroom to help students who are struggling with content, just really wrapping around students to help that four-year graduation rate improve. And then the five-year graduation rate is just as it sounds. So if we didn't graduate somebody, for instance, in this case, in 2011, their four-year cohort, did we graduate them with the 2012 cohort in that extra fifth year? And once again, we have some room to grow in terms of making sure if we didn't get it done in 4 years, we're going to get it done in 5 years. And really that's, I think we're going to have to seek out some partnerships and innovative ways to keep those kids, because fifth year seniors most, in my prior experiences, they don't necessarily want to come back for a traditional high school 7:30 in the morning until 2:40 in the afternoon. So that could be some online blended learning, some work credit study options, things like that to help that piece out.
Do we have a lot of those fifth-year seniors? Well, obviously, there was enough to, for a measurement, for a right. subgroup, right?
So if you look at if the 2012, the 93% that we were at, and so 7% of the approximately 400 kids that we didn't graduate, so that's right around probably 28 kids, mm-hmm. that then we have to work on getting them graduated this year. By August of 2014.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. It does. Okay. Thank you.
And once again, that's just a comparison. We've certainly climbed over time and are going in the right direction. But in, with our comparison districts, we certainly still have room to grow.
And then the prepared for success area, it's kind of it measures all of these areas. You don't get a grade in each one of these. It's really just a overall career and college readiness measure. So how this is going to be measured, we don't really know. This is one that's very much up in the air. They said they'll tell us before they grade us, but we don't really know. So, for example, they might take somebody who had AP and also got certified in some sort of area and weight that for more, or they might not weight it for more. But so they're basically going to look at all those different components, the things that they view as areas that you could have students ready for career and college readiness, and they're going to measure that. The idea behind it, a major idea behind it, is to give people different areas so you could like pick areas of focus. You wouldn't necessarily try to be all of those things. You might say, hey, we're really going to focus on advanced placement, and that's going to be something that we're going to push pretty hard, along with industry credentials. So, I mean, not that you wouldn't do all of these things, but they're trying to give schools leeway to kind of focus on whatever they're passionate about.
This is one that was currently rated, and it is achievement. We're going to talk about the performance index and performance indicators. And we have been received an A because we passed 95.8 of the indicators with different grade levels, and we 23 out of the 24 indicators were met, and that was an A. And it's students have to perform 75% or higher. In the next year, it'll go up to 80% or higher of the students have to pass those different levels and in the different areas, grade levels that are tested.
Index looks beyond just whether students were proficient and looks at where their levels of achievement, where they fell on a range. So schools receive points then based on where they fell and where students fall in their achievement level. So if you look proficient, they get 1 point, they'll get gained 1 point for students who scored to that level. And then as it goes up to accelerated, advanced plus, you gain a 10-point each time. But if you have students scoring in basic and limited, you drop down 0.4 of a point and then 0.3 of a point. So that is 101.8 out of possible 120 points you could receive, which is the 4.8%, and that gives us that B. And this is just our 5-year performance trend on the performance index, and we're about a half a point off about where we were, but we are at a point from where we were last year.
I think that's pretty impressive, but you know, just to point out, over 50% of our kids, or roughly 50% of our kids, are advanced or accelerated on that chart. But I would have to say that the bulk of the kids in that proficient, I would think, would be a target for the district to start looking at how to push those kids above. I mean, that's what's going to move our district forward. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, I think also getting the limit up to basic up to proficient, because as you can see, the dip down is 0.4, where if we're proficient to accelerate, which we definitely want to raise it. Mm-hmm. Because I think ultimately we want everyone to grow, but we also want to get kids proficient. We want to get, ideally we get at least 100% of our kids proficient and above. And I think that's why the weighting is the way it is. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And we'd love to see one in Advanced Plus too, of course. You don't want to leave you want to leave that one empty. So.
Yes, we want to meet the needs of all learners.
Yes, definitely.
So I'm doing gap closing. We are doing gap closing, sorry. So the gap closing is measuring how our subgroups are doing. So obviously, we're doing well in all areas except for students with disabilities and economically disadvantaged. Not that we're doing horribly, we're making growth, but there's always room for more. So we are doing this several ways, and this is, it's across the board. Graduation rate, we're doing well, but it's specifically in the So if you can move on to the next slide, we're doing this in several ways. Obviously, we've mentioned the audit in the past, so we've summoned a committee. Everybody's expressed their interest, so now we'll be starting to meet and digesting that audit. We've already increased our inclusion delivery model of instruction, especially at the elementary level, especially with math, and we're still working on how that language arts piece is going to look. And we have, of course, are always looking for different ways of differentiating instruction and finding PD and including our teachers in that. We're doing that with our special ed coordinators as well as our coaches by getting that differentiated instruction out there.
And then the ARC score model is response to intervention, and that's a model that allows teachers to give a more responsive approach to instruction and intervention. So they go through a process of looking at data and targeting where those intensive interventions need to be placed. And then they progress monitor to see if those kids are making improvement. And if they're not, then they need to look at the interventions again to see what else they need. That kind of fits in with the RIP plans to monitor improvement. That's the reading improvement monitoring plans that we talked to you about this spring. Grades K through 3 administer a state-approved diagnostic. This year our district used the ODE diagnostic for reading. That gives students a total score that allows them to be categorized as either off track, needing further assessment, or on track. The students who fall in the off-track category will then get a reading improvement and monitoring plan written that specifically addresses their needs for intervention and then in progress monitor throughout the year based on that plan. And then along with that, job-embedded professional development focused around instruction and assessment. That's where our coaches and our principals are offering instructional coaching in the classroom as well as PD during our waiver days, district professional development days, and our prime time when it starts.
How is that RTI model different than what we were doing? Or have we always been doing RTI? Or
our RTI model is in need of improvement. I think any district, if you ask, their RTI model is needs growth and change. So what we're really focusing on this year is that Tier 1 model, mm-hmm. where the what interventions can we do in the classroom before they ever need a pull-up type service or any extra intensive service. What can our general ed teachers do that may be different? Could you read the test aloud to the whole class? Would that be a benefit for the whole class? Or could the whole class work it alone and you do some read aloud in the back corner of the test? Could I chunk the test? Could I provide a wiggle seat for a child to sit on if they have ADHD or things like that? So that's what we're looking at right now, is how can we increase those Tier 1 interventions? RTI is such a large, mammoth thing that it's hard to do that all the change in 1 year.
So is that going to keep a lot of those kids from getting pulled out? And does that allow them to stay in the classroom and get their
RTI is for the general ed population.
Right.
And so our hope is to try to keep as much as we can in the classroom. So the answer to your question, yes, but if a child does need some type of intensive instruction, say they're dyslexic and they need Orton-Gillingham direct instruction in phonics, we would pull them out. Or same thing with the math fluency type thing. You'd have to pull out, do that direct explicit instruction. But the goal would be, in the RTI process, is that if you have to do that, it would be a short-term mm-hmm. intervention for so many weeks, and then we get them back in that classroom without being ever coming to my side of the education spectrum.
Thanks.
I think just to add to that as well, we worked really hard last year to go back and kind of firm up the framework, the literacy collaborative framework, mm-hmm. and I feel like that, because we have had so many new employees, new teachers kind of come on board since we first introduced that framework. So, I mean, it's not just those intervention pieces, but it's strengthening and making sure that we are implementing, like, our framework with fidelity. And I think that's something that we needed to go back and maybe just strengthen and clean up a little bit. So we worked really hard last year. Now with having coaches in every building this year, I think that's just going to continue. It's going into and, you know, making sure that teachers are teaching guided reading, you know, and really digging in deep and finding out what kids need. So again, it's just, I think it's strengthening the framework that we have in place and going a little bit deeper with it. So, sorry, just no. To jump in there.
Thank you.
If you'd like to jump in again. Okay. another component that the grade card looks at is progress. And we have had value-added scores for several years, but this year we were able to get some information about certain groups. So we received not only an overall value-added score, but we looked at gifted students and progress with our lowest 20%, and then students with disabilities. And I think it showed us some interesting things. Well, we can go back to that. But that slide, just green is good, red is bad. That's the important part. So, and
green is really good.
Yeah, green is really the, you can smile when you see that. So, if we, now you read over that. So, if you look at our overall grade, was an A. And again, value-added scores are only for math and reading students in grades 4 through 8. So that's where we're measuring those students. But when you look at what we're doing with gifted students, or our students in the lowest 20% in achievement, you see there's certainly some room for improvement there. I think, and not to use it as an excuse, but like there were over 40% of the districts in the state got Cs in their gifted area. That's an area that I think is not just us needing to work on it. It's an area that I think when they broke these components this way, something that lots of districts are now struggling with to say, okay, how do we move those top kids? And how do we move those lowest kids? That those are the areas of concern. And then you can see those students with disabilities, we're working there and moving them. And I think to me, if we look at the next slide, I think value added is probably one of the most important components that we have to measure what we're doing. Mostly because it's really how much value do you add, how much growth do you give to every kid. You know, and I personally like this mostly because my gap closing looks so crappy that this makes me a lot happier to say, well, let's look at what we're doing in all grades. And you can see we do have some in fifth and sixth grade, some areas of concern. But certainly, overall, we were 23rd in the state as far as where our value-added scores were. So we are, I think it's something that we have to celebrate, that we are moving kids and taking them where they're at and getting them to the next spot. And, you know, some of those scores are really high, and I think that's a celebration of what we're doing. So the value-added metric is important, and I think it's really given us some information to look at the areas of kids that we really need to move. But I think it's also something to say, okay, we are doing some things that are supporting kids' growth and development.
This next component is K-3 literacy, and it, as it says, it measures the improvement in reading for students in kindergarten through grade 3. This is, we're not getting a grade for this yet. This is going to be something that's going to come our way in the future. But it's pretty much tied to the third grade guarantee, which says that all third grades, by the time students get to third grade, all students should be reading at grade level. And if not, then there is a chance for retention. So I think they're really going to, by I think it's 2015, make it a graded component.
And I have to say, I was kind of excited when I saw that we were actually going to have a component for our primary little ones because, you know, everything, even as a primary teacher, well, I knew I was having an impact on those scores at third and fourth, but, you know, having our own now, for the primary teachers, having our own measure, I think it's just going to give us even more data, you know, to improve. So currently this year, then, we have administered the state diagnostics, and that's the information that we'll be reporting to the State Department that eventually will be used to grade this particular component. They haven't really told us what they're going to do, their magic or their voodoo, I think somebody said before, but we'll find out probably in December. They said they'll let us know exactly how that's going to be graded, and then we won't get those actual measures, like Lynette said, until August of 2014, so not until the next grade card. But again, we're pretty excited about it. As far as the diagnostic goes, it was an improvement, which I was excited to see. As far as the areas that it measures, it was varied. It had phonics, it had comprehension, it had fluency. So They really, I feel like, took their time and kind of looked at, you know, what does a beginning reader need to have under their belt in order to be successful at that third grade level. So we're kind of excited about it, but, you know, we're also a little, just, we're not exactly sure what that's going to look like. So.
But all schools will not get a grade in this.
Right.
It will be only those with kindergartners.
Well, there was a caveat. It said, yeah, if you have less than 5% of your kindergartners reading below level, then you won't even get measured in this component. So when you turn in your scores, if your kindergartners, you have less than 5% reading below grade level, you won't receive a grade in this. So that would be the goal.
Because they're really looking for those that have the most at risk. And
exactly.
And you bring them forward and bring those up. So.
Exactly.
So that's what it looks like now.
Right. Who knows? They may change the game on us, which that happened before, too. So.
What?
Literally every 2 years.
Yeah. Good evening. We're going to, Jonathan and I are going to provide a summary of all the slides. Again, I think it goes without saying we have some celebrations to do. Mm-hmm. Out of over 600 districts in Ohio, we finished 23rd in our value-added scores. Mm-hmm. So again, that's the green, and that's what we want to celebrate.
Well, too, if you look at the summary of the grades earned by Marysville schools, and when you compare this to other districts, especially with the first time seeing a letter grade given by the state of Ohio, Marysville is doing quite well. But what's exciting about it as well is right away, all the teachers, administrators, central office, right away the focus is, how can we get better? How can we get that higher? And being new to Marysville this year, that came very clear to us. It's about improving each and every day to make that better each and every year. So it's definitely a focus. You know, like we discussed earlier, we received grades in all these areas. Coming up in 2015, not this school year, academic year, but based on next school year's academic year, we'll have grades in the K through three literacy as a part of the third grade guarantee. Actually, just got off the phone with Dorothy Palanda, one of our state representatives here in Union County, sharing some of my thoughts about the third grade guarantee with her, specifically the retention piece. Again, that's a part of that third grade guarantee legislation.
Jonathan, in addition to the K-3 literacy that will be added, also I wanted to remind you that the prepared for success will be added. And again, how that's calculated, that's still to be determined. We've given a lot of information. Any questions?
Now that component, the overall grade next year is based on, is it?
Everything.
It's like a weighted, but they weight some of those, is that correct? They weight some of those differently, like it's, there's a different weight on achievement.
Weighted wise, I don't have the answer to that.
They might know.
I don't know the data.
Then you get the formula, ODE didn't call you and say, hey, what do you think?
Not yet.
Not, you know, they're probably figuring that out right now.
Yeah.
Let's be honest with you.
Yeah.
K-3 literacy.
Right. I bet you he's right.
No, I'm not.
The K-3 literacy right now.
Yeah.
They're figuring out the grade bands, the measures that they're actually going to use to calculate right now, and that's not even going to be determined until December of this school year. At least that's the proposed deadline.
Yeah.
So a lot of it's probably being worked out.
Wow.
In motion.
Huh?
Any other questions?
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you very
great
much.
Information. Good job.
And congratulations on what I believe is an excellent scorecard, to be honest with you.
Yes.
Terrific scores on there. They're showing we're doing the right things. No question. All right, next up we have Mr. Blind is going to talk about athletics.
Hey, how are we doing? Good evening.
I'll let Joe do most of the talking, but I think we have some changes that we think will be for the betterment of our students in terms of resources and competitiveness, and I think it's a good proposal, but Joe, I'll let you go into the details.
We've got a couple different parts here. I'd like to open with gymnastics. We had a proposal. I was approached by the YMCA, Mr. Shortell, and Coach Calvert are here tonight. They wrote a proposal for us to add gymnastics as a club sport for our kids under our high school roof to compete. This comes as no cost to the athletic department or to the school. They want to compete for Marysville High School. They're competing in the OCC in our division, and we'd like to get them approved as a club sport. I believe there's a trade that's being involved where they're going to be using the middle school gymnasium here. We're going to set it up as a gymnastics area, and it seems like a really good program, really good to.
Is that a letter sport for them? Can they letter in that, or is that just a club sport?
We would like to, as a club, it's a club sport.
Right.
But since they will be competing in the OCC
right.
this year, and lacrosse will be competing in the OCC this year for the first time, we would like to have it as a varsity sport,
gotcha.
Where you would get a varsity letter. And for a couple reasons. First of all, you know, they're competing in the OCC, mm-hmm. just the way all the other sports do. They are competing for us with our name on their chest. They're following the same rules that the other sports follow. We would like to raise them to a varsity letter sport. Also, they can get a phys ed exemption, which helps them. And for college applications, they can put on their college applications that they were a varsity letter, which any dollar you can get at college, be recruited or anything, that's a bonus.
Absolutely.
So that kind of leads into lacrosse. Coach Bashnagel's here. We're going through a change on the girls' lacrosse side. Last year we tried an experiment, which seemed to work very well. We let the boys play on the varsity soccer field. The girls played on the middle school football field. And in exchange for that, they paid us a rental fee of $1,750 each, which what we did is we put that money back into field maintenance to improve the seating through Scott's, through Kevin Kilton. So that way it didn't come out of the athletic budget. It was on top of what they used. And there was some concern, I'm not going to lie to you, there was some concern that would tear the field up and, you know, this is be a terrible thing. But in actuality, because we were able to reseed the fields, water them, and thank God we had a nice wet summer. The fields were actually better than they've ever been. And, I mean, you can ask Diana, the soccer field, Mike, soccer field was probably, varsity soccer field was as good a shape as it's ever been, wouldn't you say? And again, could be partially from a very nice wet summer, but also we were able to reseed and take care of it a little bit better because of the extra revenue we had. So for gymnastics, we'd like to add that as a varsity sport. Or not as a varsity sport, as a club sport that will receive a varsity letter. Again, that's no cost to us. We're not paying for transportation. We're not paying for supplementals. Lacrosse, it's still going to continue as a club sport, but they will be able to gain a varsity letter, which I will provide through the athletic department. And we're going to continue, hopefully, to let them use our fields, and they're going to be competing for an OCC championship. So we want to see, this is a nice experiment to see how, even though it's a club sport and they're supporting it, we're helping to organize it, we're helping to keep the coaches, have the same certifications. It's an unbelievable amount of certifications you have now to coach at any level. But I'm going to be following that. I track that, make sure all the coaches are properly certified, help them make sure we have their schedules up online, and help them. So that's what we'd like to do with gymnastics and lacrosse.
And I think, importantly along those lines, it provides students an opportunity to be involved, be a part of our school, knowing that they have the opportunity to earn a varsity letter. They can certainly go play club or AAU ball or do something, but we think we have some of the best opportunities in the school system for extracurriculars. So by providing that, we think it's a win-win.
Well, and one nice thing about when you play for high school as opposed to an AAU team, you're playing for the team on the front of your chest and not, you know, Chico's Bail Bonds.
That's
right. So, you know, we think that's a good one. The last part, we're talking about some changes in swimming. Swimming is a very expensive sport. It's probably the most expensive sport per student we have, next to football. What we'd like to do is we've got a partnership with the YMCA. Both of our coaches retired last year. Roush and Coach Terz had been a great coach, had done a great job for us, and decided that they were tired, they were going to spend some time with their families, and they stepped away. At the same time, Rick and the YMCA were looking for a new club coach to take care of their club program. Mm-hmm. So we got together and brainstormed, and we talked about what was important, what we could do, how we could help each other. big thing for me was we paid almost $7,000 last year in lane rooms, which is very expensive compared to some schools. There's some OCC schools, Newark, schools that have their own pool, they pay nothing for lane rentals. So it's no big deal to them. But for us who have to pay lane rentals, that's a good chunk of change. That is a varsity, you know, that would be every dollar of a varsity football game going just towards lane rentals.
And I think initially the boosters were also picking up additional lane rentals besides what that $7,000 were paying for. That. So that wasn't getting six of the eight lanes, but the boosters were picking up additional money for that, for all the lanes and for dry lane training. So there were additional dollars going above and beyond.
I think I was paying for four lanes, the boosters were paying for an additional two lanes. Plus they're paying for a dry lane coach to run them through conditioning, drills, etc. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would say it's probably around $4,000 a year they were paying just for that. So, and that was coming from the booster club. So Rick and I talked, and we batted around a bunch of different ideas, and Craig Faircloth, who's a former assistant coach at Ohio State, was looking for, you know, a swim team, a club team to kind of take hold of and to lead. And the YMCA was lucky enough to get him out here to be part of their program. And he's guiding the club program up through. Rick, what year did you start? How young did you go with that club program?
Club program went down here, I think, 6 years old.
And that, because obviously we don't have a middle school swim program, but through having this club program, that is a good feeder system to go up through the high school. What we'd like to do is we'd like to change the way it's funded a little bit, okay, because it's just so expensive for us. I'm going to kick in out of the athletic budget $3,500. The boosters have $1,750 that they're going to contribute, and a donor is going to contribute another $1,750. And then each swimmer contributes $200 for their pay to participate, and then $200 to the YMCA. And that also includes a membership from September to February where they can go. They're going to get the dry land training. They're going to get their lanes in the pool. We feel it's a good situation for them. We're trying to be fiscally responsible. We're trying to make sure we get continue to offer it as a varsity sport. But with the costs keep going up and up, you know, we've got to do something.
And it also brings us into a very similar model. Our golf teams are familiar with, in terms of they have their pay participate fee, students and or their families pay a membership fee to be a part of the golf course where matches and practices are played, and so it's a similar structure to that.
But I believe our boys pay $150 to the Marysville Golf Club to be a member out there. So it's a similar situation with that.
So I assume their club coaches I don't remember. Coach Faircloth has to go through the same background checks and everything else that they would have to do.
Everything.
And how do we then monitor their eligibility and stuff like that?
They're still participating on the team. They're still
right. Who monitors that since coach isn't part of
it? Just as if we had a lay coach who wasn't working in a building or another building. You would share eligibility reports with them. They'd be checking in with Joe. Joe would still be the evaluator in terms of our swimming program.
Okay.
After every grading period, we get a printout. We go through and we determine who's eligible, who's not eligible, and it's sent out on the coaches.
That's cool.
I was going to say, that's my question. How are the coaches compensated? I mean, are they compensated through the district or through?
We pay them our supplemental. I think actually it's going to go through the Y, and then they're going to pay them the full amount. But our swimming supplemental is pretty high compared to our other coaches who are not really very well paid comparatively to the other OCC schools. Our swim coaches are paid very well.
And that's for all the club sports, if that's how we compensate the club coaches? Is through
no.
This. No, okay. That's right.
Just swim because it is a varsity sport. The difference between club and varsity, if it's a recognized varsity sport, we pay a supplemental and we provide transportation.
I misunderstood. I thought we were talking about club. So then that, for the club sports, how are they the coaches compensated for that?
Art, do you get any...
In terms of any club sports, we don't pay coaches. We don't provide transportation.
Art's doing it for a love of the game. He loves lacrosse.
We're building our component set up to have our business club be the funding for our coaches. So I'll determine what they did pay and how much they did pay. So none of that has to be decided by the school district. Mr. Ryan helped with the certifications and just more representation in the ACC network. We're kind of lacrosse is a little different because it's not under OHSA yet, but OHSLA follows the same rules, so we've been running under those stipulations since we started.
There is a proposal now to add it to the OHSA. I'm expecting by Christmas it's going to be added for the spring.
Well, what about transportation?
For club?
Yeah.
They provide their own transportation.
Okay. Do the parents sign off on the sheet since we have, who would be providing that transportation? Are we responsible if something happens?
Since it is a club sport and it's not a recognized varsity sport.
Okay.
I do not believe that there's any liability issues. Okay. I'd have to double check with Mike. Mike's my guru on liability.
Is there a question?
Do we have any liability since it's a club sport?
Transportation.
For transportation.
The state does not require you, even for our varsity sports, I think, it is a board policy, I believe, but the state does not require you to transport even varsity sport. Okay. Some of the schools, they're having financial issues this year, like Westville. They would bring the kids over and drop them off, and they were on their own to get home. And hopefully we never get to that point, but that's it's not beyond the realm of possibility.
Well, I know when I was coaching golf, I couldn't let one of the girls even leave with their parents unless they signed a note to me.
We have a form saying you can go. As long as you do it beforehand. And don't.
Okay.
I don't like anybody blindsiding their coach at the last minute. Hey, I got to go.
Right.
And that doesn't work well for anybody.
Right.
So in the case where the boosters actually compensate the coaches, and it sounds like that might not be happening yet. But
if, like for the dry land, when the swimming used to do it,
right,
it would go through us. They'd make a donation to the treasurer, and then we would do a supplemental, and we would pay them.
Okay, so we would do that for the clubs then?
No, they're on their own.
Okay, I guess my understanding, so the clubs are, the coaches are being paid through the boosters.
Let's just take clubs. Lacrosse and gymnastics, which is what we're here talking about tonight. If they were to pay coaches, no money is going to funnel through us. If through their own local governing body or booster group that's non-affiliated with us would decide to pay them a stipend, that is up to them. We don't regulate the fees that they charge.
But the boosters would be different than, our football boosters.
I would consider more of a governing board for their club.
Well, what I'd like to do is, and this is a separate issue, is bringing them under the MAA. We have a control. We can just monitor it. We have new leadership with the MAA now with Mr. Merrick and Mr. Adams. And we bring them under the umbrella of the MAA to help monitor.
Because there is some sort of responsibility we have with the boosters, right? I know they don't. It's kind of weird.
It's a very strange type of situation. Yeah, they're governed by us, but yet we don't really have any control over them.
Yeah. And so I was just wondering.
It's one of those things that I think you'll see as things happen throughout the state. You're going to see more control coming into the school district, just like they did the student activities back in the early 80s.
I know you met with parents, and I think the parents were pretty optimistic about it.
Cautiously optimistic. Give it a try this year and see how it goes.
Right.
Yeah, if anybody's in too bad a shape, the swim boosters have enough money, they could pay for every single kid's $200 right. if they so choose. Right. They've got a nest egg where they're okay. Mm-hmm. Now, preferably, you know, everybody will be able to pay that.
Right.
You know, if we did not offer it as a sport and it was just a club program and they had to pay through the club, mm-hmm. I mean, anybody that's had club situations, mm-hmm. much, much higher cost than just the $200.
Right.
And I think this is also going to provide a real quality coaching staff and help foster a good learning and competitive environment for our swim program.
Well, plus, I hit up Rick a little bit before the meeting, and he talked about we don't have a club team. Is that correct? In the high school level here in Marysville, we didn't.
But once varsity season's over, most of the people who wanted to excel in swimming would drive all the way to Springfield and participate in the Springfield YMCA club program. Mm-hmm. And, now we're excited because we're going to be able to offer that at our Y with coaches that are the same caliber. We have coaches that the head coach of the swimming that we're partnered with and our on-deck coach, Craig Faircloth, both have experience with swimmers making it to the Olympic job. So
now I got to ask, is that an eligibility problem if you're being coached in the off-season by your varsity coach?
No. There's certain, like most of the Olympic sports like tennis, golf, they don't have issues.
Oh, they don't? Okay. Yeah. Well, that sounds like an excellent opportunity for those kids that want to, you know, make that a, you know.
Well, it's a good feeder program, and it continues on what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Good job.
All right.
Thank
you.
So you're getting all the boosters kind of under one umbrella or oversight?
Well, we've had some issues here recently, and we had a change of leadership, and I think we're going in the right direction now. I'm very confident that that Mr. Merrick and Mr. Adams will lead them back to where we need to be.
So does that cover all the different sports boosters?
Well, we have different levels of financial support right now. We have certain teams who are running bingo and have their own 501c3 that have larger bank accounts than I have for all the sports. They're doing very well. And some sports, like girls' tennis, you don't do as much fundraising, people only have probably about $1,000 in the kit. So there's a wide discrepancy right now between the different groups. And basically with the MAA, that helps monitor the finances. It helps them keep track of their funds. It keeps different groups from stepping on each other's toes as far as fundraising ideas and possibilities. One thing boys basketball has done here this last year, they're hosting a lot of the AU tournaments in our locations. And the coaches have been great. They've been funneling all that money back into the program. One of the locker rooms, next time you're up to high school, I'll take you over and show you. One of the locker rooms that was used for storage and was just in terrible shape, boys basketball spent $10,000 of their own money, completely refurbished it just for a basketball locker room.
Sure. I just saw it.
And by doing things, they're getting creative. You know, nobody wants kids going door to door selling candy. But by doing things that, you know, we bring people in from outside, they're coming, they're using our facility, they're paying us to do it, they're eating in our, you know, restaurants. It's a win-win.
Well, I was just wondering, when you were talking about this umbrella, if it was going to encompass other things like the band boosters or...
Band boosters are their own kind of entity, and they really don't want to...
really?
No. We have a deal with them. They have the visitor concession stand now, and all the band parents who buy season tickets, we split the season tickets with them.
But then the MAA is kind of oversight of pretty much everything else?
Yes. If the band would like to join the MAA, I'm sure there'd be no trouble, but I believe the band has their own 501c3, and they're kind of their own entity.
So do these other host organizations, do some of them have their own 501c3 status but are still under the oversight of the MAA?
A few have their own 501c3 and still belong to the overall group. Again, it's more for bingo than anything else. I believe softball and baseball do it because of bingo. Basketball, they had an accountant this year, just one of their parents, who did it all for them. They have their own 501c3. That's more for the basketball, so they can write checks on site and give them to the officials and give them to the teams and that stuff. But I believe right now there's four groups. I forgot the quarterback club. Four groups have their own 501c3.
Is football doing bingo again now?
They're working on it. They're going to go in. Supposedly they're going in with softball. And they're going to try and offset the nights that baseball's doing it. Bingo's kind of come back up. You know, there was a big drop-off after the smoking wall went through. But it's now started to get back up there and making very good money.
Yeah.
Very good money. But we're, you know, I'm very proud of our athletes right now. Right now, all of our girls' tennis, boys and girls' soccer, football, and volleyball, I think I'll have a winning record for the first time in school history. Everybody's on the same page.
Absolutely.
Make great progress. I don't want to jinx this.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on wood. And just so you know, football had is under a new system this year. The top 35 teams or 36 teams in the northern part of the state are in a bracket, and there's 36 teams in the southern part of the state that are in a bracket. And the top 16 teams make the playoffs. So we're 3-0 right now. And, you know, very cautiously optimistic. But here's kind of the cutoff so you can plan ahead for your November 8th. If we're 8-2 or better, we've got a good chance to host because we'll be probably one of the top 8 teams. If we're 7-3 or 6-4, we're probably going to travel to Cleveland.
Play St. Ed's.
Maybe, but we're at least playing week 11, which is, you know,
right.
Is great for
absolutely.
These kids.
Absolutely.
You know, we've got good kids coming.
Good.
So, we're cautiously optimistic.
Absolutely.
Nice job with the athletic program so far.
Yeah.
It's all Joe.
All good.
And our coaches and our kids.
It's a team effort. We're all working together.
Great. Thank you
very
much.
We're going to head to girls soccer now.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Appreciate it. All right. Next up, Dr. Reimer's here from the ESC to give us an update on our treasurer search. Oh, man.
It's nice to see all of you again.
Nice to see you, Reimer.
I want to start by congratulating you on what I understand has been a really super start to your new school year, where you've integrated your excellent new staff with the already outstanding staff that you had. It sounds like you're all geared up to just keep making the place better and better. It doesn't get any better.
Very exciting year this year, for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like it. The treasurer's search is going on. We're just now beginning to really receive some applications. It takes people a while. You look through the application format, and it even takes a while to fill it out, frankly. So that's coming. You remember that the deadline for the applications is October 10th, so that's about 3 weeks from today, I believe. So that's when you'll typically have more of the applications come in.
On the 9th?
Right.
Before the end, it usually happens. But I wouldn't expect, we wouldn't expect a super number of applications. If it's somewhere between 10-20, that's going to be really a good group to begin with. We're not getting large numbers, but you've heard me say more than once, you only need how many?
One.
You need one really good one. So that's what you're looking for. And we're continuing to talk to targeted candidates, making appointments with them. Your board representatives have talked privately with people who are not yet candidates. They're not yet applicants. They haven't said, yes, I'm interested in that job. And so it is okay for one or two board members and the search firm to talk to those individuals to even see is there even a possible fit between us. And we're continuing to do that. In fact, I hope that I'm going to be able to confirm tonight with the board representatives a Wednesday 8:30 next week, 8:30 in the morning meeting. And I think that's clear with everybody, but I'll get in touch with you to confirm that. So I think we'll have that one set up, too. Right now, by the design of the process, you'll remember that one of the things that was going to happen during the last couple of weeks was that we were going to begin to define and develop the profile of exactly what you were looking for. And we've done that by surveying the four groups that you gave to us. You gave us the groups of the board, the community, the staff, and also your finance committee. And we've done that. We've had those surveys, and tonight I've just passed out to you the survey results. And you'll remember in that we were asking people, the real meat of it was that we were asking people, when you're looking at the skills and the characteristics that you think we need most in the next treasurer for this school district, in each of these categories, what are the top three for you? And I think it's interesting that we had, of course, all five members of the Board of Ed participate in the survey. We had 54 staff members participate in it. We had 92 community members, and we had 4 from the finance committee. So that's a total of 155 people participated in the survey because they were interested enough to be able to help the board define and finalize, here's the kind of person that we're looking for this position. And I just have to compliment the school board and the community for voting for the school board, because I think it's remarkable when you start looking at the data of the returns and how each group identified the top three characteristics or skills that they thought were necessary in each of the sections. The school board and the rest of the people, staff, and community, you're like walking hand in hand practically as far as what you believe the district needs. I think that's really a compliment to the community, first for electing you as board members, and then second for you as board members, that you're doing an excellent job of representing the community from which you come and stand for. So just looking at these very quickly, you've got them in front of you, and I won't belabor any points, but under leadership, it was very obvious what the first one was. It was to establish and manage sound fiscal practices, and the rest of that sentence. No question what the second one was, participate with the district superintendent and Board of Education in the development and implementation of the district strategic plan. And then the third one, there's a little bit of a difference in the third one, but there's not too much question about it. It ends up being that top one, work with the district superintendent and Board of Education with input from other stakeholders, if you look at the totality of the people that participate. Mm-hmm. In the next section is financial management. You were lockstep, all of the groups. The school board and everybody else had number one, effectively manage district financial accounts, including all those. Number two, to collect, analyze, and interpret financial data for budgeting, forecasting, and decision making. And number three, to demonstrate knowledge, performance, and accuracy of standard accounting practices, blah, blah, blah. So again, no question at all there. The next section, facilities, property, and capital assistance asset management. Again, you were lockstep. Number one was provide financial oversight and analysis of fiscal implications to the district support services. Number two, develop and monitor risk management practices. And number three, acquire and maintain building and capital assets. There were little differences there, but they came out pretty solid again, one, two, three. And then in the next section, communication and collaboration, it couldn't have, as you can see, it couldn't have been any more exact there. Number one, demonstrate confidence in the communication of financial reports to all stakeholders. Number two, communicate effectively and openly while demonstrating a willingness to collaborate with internal stakeholders, and number three, communicate effectively and openly while demonstrating a willingness to collaborate with external stakeholders. And then the last section of those was professionalism, and once again, it's one, two, three again. Maintain compliance with applicable local, state, and federal laws. That was number one. Number two was model and expect fairness, honesty, and consistency. And number three, understand, uphold, and comply with professional ethics, including licensure code and so on. And then if there's any real differences between your groups, they show up a little bit in that bottom section where you were supposed to rank these different sections that we just had, the sections of leadership, financial management,
facilities, property, and capital, asset management, communication, collaboration, and professionalism. And you can see how the board rated them. You can see how everybody else did. Once again, though, for the very top one, all of the groups were exactly the same. It was financial management. For the second one, they were all the same, communication and collaboration. And then it breaks a little bit, but it's pretty clear that the third one would be facilities, property, and capital as asset. The fourth one would be leadership, and the fifth one would be professionalism, if you're looking at just what each of the groups did and comparing them together. So what we were hoping that you would do tonight is that you would give me some instruction on what do you want to do as far as finalizing this profile so that we can get it set up so that when we begin to do the interviewing, you can use this profile as one of the outlines for you to use in that interviewing process. So my suggestion to you is that you simply instruct me to follow what appears to be pretty obvious as far as the ones you see.
Yeah, I mean, it appears that, you know, everybody's, you know, across the board seems, you know, seems right in line with, you know, maybe a one and a two were swapped a little bit, but
right.
But in essence, all of the qualities that we're looking for, it looks like we're aligned across the spectrum, if you will.
Yeah, I would say some of the differences have more to do with perspective of the, you know, yeah. I mean, like, for instance, the board and leadership, you know, obviously, if you look, we understand that the leadership and managing personnel is very important. So, I mean, there's things like that.
Right.
I think the board valued leadership overall is more important just because
we know how important it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of an everyday thing, and I think, you know.
That's what we deal with and we rely on.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, leadership falls into doing all of those things, right. To be honest with you. If you have you know, poor leadership, you won't be able to accomplish any of those things,
right.
To be honest with you. So,
and as we set up your materials for interview, you'll remember from the superintendent ones that you used, it really doesn't matter what order the three are in, because
right.
all three of them are on there for you to pay attention to and to remind you of. So the order just doesn't matter that much. What matters is what are the top three in each of the areas.
I mean, I think we can use the results, and if there is any variance in there, we can use our questions to highlight things that we think are more important, you know, I think. So.
Yeah, I would just, you know, and I appreciate all of the input, you know, that we've gotten into this, but I, as someone who, you know, as part of our governance team, I believe leadership falls into that top three. I mean, I appreciate the, but at the end of the day, you know, as someone that we have to, you know, we have to bring on board and has to be part of that leadership group, and to me, that quality stands out as a top three that I think we.
You know, what do you think? So, yeah, I mean, leadership's pretty important.
Very.
Right. Yeah, we can easily do that, and sometimes some boards choose to. Okay, we've got three that we got from everybody, but we think there really needs to be a fourth one. Because it doesn't matter what order they're in,
right.
Because you're going to pay attention to all of them. So I can either add it as a fourth, or I can add it in place as a three.
I'd say that fourth one, professionalism for that fourth one.
Uh-huh. I have the fourth.
Okay.
Although a lot of the groups, a lot of the groups chose that facilities, property, and capital asset management as their number three. You know, so I mean, I guess
right.
that's something to consider if so many other people. Thought, I mean, that's where, what do you think, Cindy? You know, what treasurer's perspective.
All the assets go through the treasurer's office. I mean, that's the responsibility of part of that. I know we've got a great business manager with Mike and everything, and we collaborate a lot together about all of that. So it's important. And I think looking at our structures, our buildings, our things, and what I'll present to you tonight on permanent improvements, you'll understand why we collaborate so much together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very important. Probably I would, to me, it's probably more important than the professionalism. I mean, if you've got good leadership, you're going to have professionalism
right.
Okay.
in there. So, and to me, that's within the nature of it. So.
I'm with that.
That sounds good to me. I mean, that's from the horse, right? Not too flattering, but well, you know what I mean.
Well, and when we get into the question, I'm sure the old Broadnum, frankly, will cover it all, because school districts like Marysville, if there's one thing that's consistent about them, it's that they want it all.
Right.
They don't want just this or that.
I do.
Yeah.
A little bit of the time I spent with these picky people, I noticed that was the case.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think it was really interesting to read all of the comments that came with that survey, too.
I was going to point that out. If you haven't had time to read that, we sent that to you, too. Those comments are good, and there's some really excellent suggestions in there for questions.
Yes, there are.
Some excellent suggestions for characteristics that you ought to be paying attention to. So if you haven't had time to read that, I know you may not have yet. Before we get into interviewing, you'll really want to read that, because there's some great suggestions in there.
Right. And, absolutely.
And so many great comments about our teachers and our leadership and our staff. I mean, that was
wasn't that fun?
A lot of the comments about that. That was nice.
All right. So do you have what you need from us, sir?
I do.
Fantastic.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We don't need board approval.
I mean, I just want to be clear. We do not need board approval for those club sports, correct? Right. I mean, they really came in to present, and I didn't hear any.
I didn't hear any pushback for doing that. I just want them to be clear that there is no board approval required for the club sports, and that was a presentation to us, and I think we're all excited about it.
Absolutely.
It's a great thing for our kids.
Yeah.
I did want to comment, though. I just think it's just another, it highlights the collaboration that's going on within our community now.
Right. It's amazing.
It's awesome.
Well, and the leadership in our community, because I was talking to Coach Bashnagel. My son Connor was on his first lacrosse team, and I just remember way back then how passionate he was and how excited he was about bringing lacrosse to Marysville, and now here it is.
Yep.
It's great.
All right. All right, next up is the superintendent's report, and I apologize for those of you listening on the internet tonight. Mrs. Mankins is not here with us, so Andy Culp, our assistant superintendent, is taking the hot seat tonight. So we appreciate him being here and doing that for us. So, Mr. Culp, superintendent's report.
Thank you. So I just wanted to reiterate what a celebration being 23rd out of 610 districts is in value added for this district. What an accomplishment. And that is really, as someone said in the presentation, an excellent thing to focus on, because achievement, many will say it's a low bar, 70% or 80% even next year. But to score 23rd out of 610 schools on a metric of growth, that's taking kids from where they are and growing them in their learning, is quite an accomplishment. 23rd in the state of Ohio is a real celebration. So I wanted to reiterate that. I also want to again thank Rick Shortell for his meaningful, genuine, heartfelt collaboration with the district, as evidenced by the previous presentations. The YMCA also is supporting Creekview this year during their lunch program. Due to some of the challenges we have in staffing, they are covering our lunch in terms of planning activities through the Y with our kids and students at Creekview in that 5-6 building. And by all reports, it's going extremely well. So again, thank you, Rick, for that continued support. I wanted to mention a collaboration we have with Scott's. We are at Creekview and Northwood engaged in a STEM project around gardening entitled Seeds. It's in its infancy, but it's exciting. And the potential, I think, could be exponential. Next board meeting, there will be a presentation on that to this board, so you all can ask questions and learn more about the goals and objectives of that important initiative in collaboration with one of our major companies in this district, that is Scott's. So I think you'll find that really engaging. I wanted to mention that. The final thing I'm going to mention is, as you know, through your leadership and endorsement, we engaged in a staggered start this year. And it was really nice because we received, we being Diane and I, multiple emails thanking us, but more importantly than thanking us, the benefit to students and student learning in terms of hitting the ground full speed ahead with great insights to the learners that were walking through the door every day about where they were, with far more insights about how to instruct all kids that were walking through the door. So, again, that staggered start really enabled the staff to get to know their students significantly better, and that's, again, through your leadership.
So, is that something we're going to continue then next year? Or
it would be my recommendation, absolutely.
No fog delay the first day,
though. That's what I was going to say, yeah. No fog on the first day.
I told Diane, I said, you know, I get you've only been superintendent here about a year and a half, but after 2 full years, you ought to be able to control that, too.
That's right.
So we'll see about that. So that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Culp? All right, thank you. Next up is the treasurer's report.
Changes since July. We just received our valuations from the county auditor, and what looks to be a very large decrease, over $24 million in valuation, mainly came in the commercial industrial area. In fact, when we were working on the forecast earlier this week, we were looking at it, and some of those old levies are almost to the max in our commercial industrial effective rates. So that 8.9 is over 8 mils now. And so when talking with Andrea, when we were looking at this, she said, I'm not so sure that the effective mils, we might have to bump up the residential ag because of the loss in the commercial industrial. So those are areas that we really have to look at and keep an eye on. Our commercial industrial went down. The residential ag went up, but not in the residential area, even though before the meeting, Sue and Jeff and I were looking at ours real quick, and they said, have you looked at your property value? I'm like, no, I haven't had a chance to. I looked at it, I'm like, oh my gosh, mine went up too. But our residential went down from their estimate for the whole district by 3.58%, about $14 million. But our agriculture went up by 35%, over $21 million in our ag values. Ag values are now have been doing a lot of changes, and those changes are because of when we were meeting with the business people this week, I said, you own a property and you own a couple acres on your farm, you could have maybe 4 different types of soil within that 4 acres. My father-in-law and I always get into discussion, and he goes, my values went way up, Cindy, why'd that happen? I said, well, Farm Bureau said, yes, our values are too low. So over the last 5 to 6 years, during the reappraisals, that's what's happened. They're bringing them up. So that's why the agriculture went up. There are over, I think, 400 different or 500 different types of soil throughout the state. It's different, so different. In the family farm up in Hancock County, we could tell exactly where the sand is and where the loam is. You know, so you know, just in that small 80 acres, we know what's going on there. So
that's a quick question.
Sure.
So that loss of $24 million. What's the impact, I guess, on our our bond revenues.
That's where we're going to get to.
Okay, I look at this.
Okay, that makes a big difference. So,
and before we get, I guess I'm curious why there is such a huge decrease in commercial industrial. You know, when I think we've added businesses.
There's a large valuation change in a company.
Okay.
Must be a big company.
It is a big company.
Yes.
That's right.
The remainder, so now we go on to, we want to talk about the bonds and then the permanent improvement. So bonds, we did our refinancing last year. The remainder of our bonds, the refinancing is $139 million. Prior to our refinancing, it was $139 million is what we owed. With our refinancing, it's $138 million, so a total savings of $959,000. Big difference. That's overall. Our bonds go out to 2029. The first 5 years of our bonds, we have a $1.7 million savings, which is what we strive for. Remember back in April, maybe? March, April, we thought we were going to do it again, but the bonds went out. We didn't get the savings. So it could have even been, it would have even been better. And we, with decreasing the values, that's where we needed it. That's really, we really need it right now. So the debt structure is the payments, they're going to be lower at the beginning, and they'll get more during the last few years. So now we have our receipts. We receive our tax. We get about $4 million in taxes for our bonds. The TIF payments, those are our TIF, our tax incremental financing areas. There are some commercial areas, and there's some residential areas. I put in there what we've received so far, just doubled it for this year. So that might go up for the next tax collection, but that's where I just estimated it at. So that's, we received half of that amount in August. Or
if the property values go down, will the TIF receipts go down?
They could. And then our tangible homestead, or the whole harmless receipts, is $1.5 million, and that will never change as long as we have the bonds out there. So that's what we'll be receiving from the state until our bonds are paid in full. So our expenditures for fiscal year 14 are the principal and our interest, and then other expenses. That's mainly auditor and treasurer's fees. That's where we're at in that. So revenue is 6.5, expenditures are 7.7. That gives us a negative balance of $1.2 million. And that's what would need to be transferred from our permanent improvement.
You may have this on another slide. So where is that revenue compared to last year?
It's about the same.
So
and our expenditures were the same?
The revenue is going to be less than what it was last year,
right?
Because we are fully... When you pay your bond, the bond is based on whatever the value is. Since we dropped $24 million,
right,
take 6.2 mils times that $24 million, that's the difference.
So that's why the difference is.
That's why last year we had $933,000 that we needed to transfer to the bond from PI. It's what the forecast was before we started working on this. It's now 1.2, so it's about $300,000 more that we need to transfer. Okay.
So if, again, I might be jumping ahead on this, but in a normal district where you didn't have the TI supplementing your bond retirement, you would have payments that you need to make, and
yes,
those payments would drive what your millage is that you collect.
Exactly.
So with the valuations going down, if that happened in any other district, the auditor would just adjust those rates accordingly to what you say you need
exactly
for payments. But because we're supplementing things with our PI, we just ask for we instead of asking, here's what we need to make our payments, we say,
this is what we need to take out
this
of PI.
Is how much, this is the millage we want.
Well,
yeah.
And we can request the other way.
I mean, we can say we are no longer putting any money from PI into those bonds.
But I guess I wasn't suggesting that we pull that out. What I was suggesting is that there is a baseline expectation for how much we're collecting.
Right.
Because all our forecasts and all that stuff is based on an assumption of this is how much we're going to collect, and valuations going up. But if valuations go down, you would still want to collect what you expect to collect.
Exactly.
I'm not saying you pull out the PI and ask for more, but I'm just saying at least
pull it up to where it needs to be.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I have given you some more information about that, so we'll discuss that a little bit. So during the next 5 years, because I just wanted to do real overview here, and then when we go into our work session, we can really dig into these numbers more so. These are what we would need to transfer based on everything that we've got right now. So for the next 5 years, which is a typical forecast or five-year forecast, for the next 5 years, you're looking at this amount of money that needs to be transferred.
And what the next is normally, don't they revalue every 3 years?
Every 3 years is this was an actual reappraisal year. 2013
okay.
is the reappraisal year.
Right.
Then in 3 years, we'll have the triennial update, which is just a basic
update.
And they look at sales and they don't come out. This one, they came out and looked at everybody's house as to, they took pictures. They gave everybody a card. Did you do anything, to your basements? Did you, and some, they even knocked on their door, would have knocked on their doors, if they thought, if somebody said, hey, I know that they did a basement. And, we're a small enough community. We aren't like Columbus or Franklin County. We're a small enough county that they could say, somebody knows somebody that says, I know they redid their basement. So you need to look at that.
What was the basis, or what assumptions do we make about future valuations and revenue for
1% increase?
So we did, and is that what we've always done in the past? Have you seen 1%?
I usually, in the past, we've done a little bit more for a reappraisal year, and then a little, not quite as much as more on an update year. But because of the craziness, there's no rhyme or reason right now. You look at our valuations over the last, since about 2005, there's no rhyme or reason on any of them. Some years have went way down. I think there was, first year I was here, I think there was several areas, and I think it was in your area, Sue, auditor just automatically gave everybody a 10% decrease in their values.
Yeah, all you have to do is go to the auditor's website, go to your property, and do a valuation history.
But they said, we had seven areas that we just gave them, the auditor just gave them an arbitrary 10% decrease. So those are the things that we can't control, but we just look at them and see where do we go from here.
Can I just ask one thing just for our work session? Can we have those numbers, what we had planned when we put our financial plan together? Because I believe that would be our baseline that we would would want to talk to. I'm just asking, just make a mental note that, because that's compared to that, and that would set kind of where we need to.
Yeah, I was trying to frantically look back at old stuff.
Me too, and I couldn't find it. And I was like, it must have been paper versions. So if we could just have that to talk to, that would be fantastic.
Glad to.
Thank you.
Permanent improvements now. We spent, Mike and Jeff Wargo, myself, Chris Dice, Diane, I think that's five of us that met back in June, putting together what do we think we need, where are we going, what's all going on for the next few years. And we sort of mapped it out and said, okay, these are where we're at, what are our receipts. You see the permanent improvement, there's no increase in revenue. Because of the fact it's a regular levy, so that as values go up, the millage goes down and vice versa. So
it's enough below.
And it's enough below that it's not going to go back up all the way. So, but based on those amounts coming out, the amount from the previous slide, by 2018, based on what we feel as items that need to be done within the district for permanent improvements, we will be out of money by 2017, fiscal year 2017.
Now, does that assume, it's like back in spring of 2012 when we were doing the levy presentations, we talked about the plan being a 1 mil increase in?
This did not, this right now does not include that 1 mil, okay? That did not include that 1 mil. I thought I'd take it out to make it a little bit cleaner right now. So the annual expenditures that we have, we've got a COG, it's for the fiber payments on that lease that, or that note that we got, everybody. So we'll have a small payment there. Our copiers are paid out of the permanent improvement. We've got maintenance repair. We've got a lot of technology software, licenses, those type of things come out of PI. Textbooks, maintenance supplies, site improvements, which is a big one. New equipment, a lot of that's technology equipment. New vehicles, new buses, two buses a year on a 31 bus fleet. That's not really that much, you know. If we might want to do three, we probably should three, really. Our debt payments, auditor treasurer's fees, and then the transfers to bond. There are some debt payments that they did at an OASPO pool that is, they're sort of like a lease payment, and those run out, I think, right around 2017, 18, in that round, 19 maybe, that those will pay. And I think a lot of that paid for some of the athletic areas.
I did notice a couple of areas we can talk a little bit about it, the textbooks, which traditionally we haven't spent a whole lot of money on. We have budgeted $500,000, more than $500,000 every year.
And we did that because of the fact that when Diane and all of us were meeting, she goes, we need textbooks at least. That's what an adoption, a subject would cost.
Right.
So we have not, this was the first adoption since I've been here on the math. And I know social studies has been a long time, and I can't tell you how long all the other ones, science, and they're all ready to be. So that's why we did an adoption a year. And so I did lower those a little bit when I gave you the forecast. We did have over 600,000, and what I gave you was about what we spent this year in that. So
I guess
we lowered
I'd like
that.
To talk about that number a little bit more, just because I think I would hope that the adoptions would start to get a little, I mean, and some of the other subjects would be a little bit cheaper in that you wouldn't have to do it every year for the next, you know,
Wouldn't do every, an adoption would be a subject.
Right.
So it would be a subject. So,
right, sure.
So yeah, some of them may not be as much, but that's what we just thought. Well, let's just put it in there. But right now we can always discuss it.
Because it has just been forever since.
But
all we've done since I've been here in the last 4 years have just been little piddly amounts. You know, not very much. Maybe 50,000, 100,000 at the most, but not a full fledged adoption like we did this year.
And there were some other numbers.
Which was much
needed.
I'm sure there's similar justification for it. Just think during the work session we can talk about those.
Oh, absolutely. So these are some of the special projects. We are taking on the phone system, the top special project, and the reason is that every week I've had at least one telephone conversation cut off. Our phones, we cannot get phones to repair them, so we will be working on that. They will be voice over IP. They'll be running off of our fiber. They will not be off the digital copper anymore, so it'll make it a, it'll be a big difference. We are going with a company called ShoreTel.
Was this the one that we had approved some time ago?
No.
So what happened with that?
Well, we were going to some time ago, but we didn't. That was the one that we approved a while back was wireless and
I think
all
it
that.
Factored into the decision. Maybe.
Yeah, that was part of the decision, but we didn't do the phone part of it. So other areas, the track at the high school, that's almost to the crumbling stage. So that's a one area. There's some transformer replacements at the buildings for anywhere from $50,000. Well, they're $50,000 a piece. It's a total of 200 tennis courts at high school, football, track and stadium at Bunsell Middle School, the fence at the current stadium, the sanitary sewer removal at Raymond, the windows at the district office, air conditioning at Edgewood, fire panels at all the elementaries, and then that total project list is over $2 million. So if you factor all those in, plus our regular ones that are already here, we're short.
Are we expecting to do, are we starting all of those projects now, or are they staggered over the next 5 years?
We haven't decided when to, because we're sort of still looking at what we need to do on everything.
This is, I mean, something like this, could that be brought to those business meetings that you hold with the business leaders to throw that out there and see, are there any ideas for, you know, any suggestions from them, or recommendations or donations?
Sure.
We don't trade-offs, Sue.
So
not donations. Trade-offs.
Here's what one collaboration. One bill right now is $668,000. It was $693,000 a year ago. So you can see that $24,000 difference. For fiscal year 14, you can see it goes from anywhere from 1.87 all the way up to 2.27 mils. Is that difference there? That if you put that all the way through. So what I've given you is just a little information here, and this was just to start the thoughts processing with everybody. It's not to say this is a recommendation. I know when Bill and I were talking, when all of us were talking last year, we said, okay, do 1 mil and 15. Never, I don't think anybody had in their minds that we would ever do an evaluation like we did. So that's a big hit. So tax year 12, do not change. Here's, these are the options. Don't do anything in 14. Up it by a half a mil or a mil. Wait until 15. Do a half mil in 14, half mil in 15, there's your mil. Do collection of a mil in 15 and another half in, you know, so you can play, we can play around with those as much as we want. What's on the board agenda tonight is our rates as they stand right now that have to be approved by September 30th. We just got those last week, unfortunately. So with those rates,
so that really sets up the discussion for our, for our work session.
That sets up our discussion for our work session. What we want to do, where we think we're going to be going, how we're going to get there. We all saw the need for the permanent improvement levy. This building, we still have money in our construction fund to do this building from the bonds.
Right.
And to work on that. So that's why the 200, the extra money in the permanent, or the permanent appropriations are increased for that. But so what I gave you on your, for a little bit more information, I gave you two sheets in the paper clip there. The permanent improvement fund forecast with bond millage, I've given you 1 mil, what it would do at the end of the year through that, and what a half a mil would be, help with, and then the bond millage needed for payments, that's the second sheet, and so that'll give you a little idea there on what that does also to where you're at and where we're at and what we need to do as far as the bonds and all. You know, this is something that when I first arrived and I said, where's our forecast for PI? It was one of my, like, no forecast on such a large thing.
Good question, right?
That was a good question at the time. And every time I get into looking at this again, it's like, where are we going with it again? Because something else has happened that we have no control over.
Can you email that to me? Or email that to us? Or
sure.
You, please. Because it's going to go in my folder, and then when I get to work, and I go, where was that at? If you would, please.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions? Okay, great. Excellent report. Thank you very much. Next up, we have the High Point Report. Mr. Lasker.
This is based on last month's meeting, and really from a board perspective, board action perspective, not a whole lot to talk about there, outside of the fact that we talked a little bit about valuations and how it impacted our forecast, or our, really our budget. So our permanent appropriations will probably, we got to find about $30,000 more of cutting because we're sticking to that, you know, no deficit spending
right
out there. And then just the other things that are worth noting are just some awards. They're always out there competing. So I'm going to go down a list of things that we talked about. Sally Andrews, who's actually from Marysville, went and placed ninth in the nation for HOSA conference, which is a health technology conference.
Oh, wow, great.
Two of our instructors, Melissa Sizemore and Megan Schneider, forget that one. Sorry, I just want to say hi. that's what it was. It got split under my bullet items. Basically, they're working with Rhodes State to help develop a transition of math to STEM, which sounded pretty exciting. And then they're looking to Dave Lindsay, who does their mechanics, auto mechanics class out there, is actually spent the summer trying to incorporate the marine industry. So they're actually going to be working on boats.
Wow.
And then,
let's see
here. Yeah, exactly. What's your name? High Point graduates, Becca Crom and Kaylin Trow, actually competed at Nationals for the chapter showcase. They were in the culinary program, and they actually finished first. Took home the gold.
Nationals. All right.
Yeah. And Becca Crom actually walked away with $10,000 scholarship.
Wow.
Nice.
Holy cow.
Doing some professional development with staff, working really on how to move from proficient to mastery. I'm not an educator, so I'm not exactly sure what all this means, but being able to use knowledge in a non-artificial environment.
Sounds like something you'd want to do.
Exactly. High Point Communication, I know they have a communication director out there, and they're actually moving to Instagram. And they're like one of the first districts in the country
really
doing that. And they've got the controls in place and mm-hmm. the approval process in place. I'm not even really sure what Instagram is. I'm a technology person.
It's Facebook's photo sharing. It's Facebook's photo sharing.
It's like Facebook section. For the pictures.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Of course
it's so. I don't know that from my view, you're not missing much.
And that's about it. So.
Okay. So. Great. Thank you. Next up is the Finance Committee report.
Legislative.
I clicked ahead.
Here's the whole of the legislative report. There actually was a House bill introduced on health education by Representative Sykes and Watchman to require the State Board of Education to adopt national health education standards or to develop its own health education standards based on the national standards for grades kindergarten through 12. However, neither the Senate nor the House has been in session yet, so that's pretty much it. And right now they are scheduled, the House for October 2nd and the Senate for October 1st. But they had been scheduled before and those got canceled, so don't hold your breath.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now the Finance Committee report.
Okay. We met, when did we meet? On September 9th, and Cindy updated the committee on the permanent appropriations that we will be voting on tonight. Also talked about the teacher negotiations that were completed in August, and then talked about insurance and had some discussion about the Federal Affordable Care Act and how that's going to impact our district. And really, we just talked about what a great insurance committee we have and how they've been on top of things as much as possible, given the amount of information that's out there. Talked about our transition plans for the treasurer position. Diane talked about our renewal levy that is going to be on the ballot in November, the 6.56 mil five-year renewal. No increase in taxes. Yeah, no increase in taxes. Did I say that? Let people know that due to the new laws that by putting it on as a renewal, then that does not impact the rollback and the homestead exemptions. And then we talked in our old business, we talked about our committee membership, and I sent out to you guys kind of a refresher on the purpose of the committee.
We thought it was, you know, probably a good time every year to look at what the purpose of the committee is, and so we've outlined, you know, the main things that they look at and talked about some special projects that could be out there for this year, and really just wanted you to look that over, and if you had any other thoughts about things that the Finance Committee ought to be looking at, let us know. And then we just want to try and beef up that committee again. You know, I think the maximum number has usually been in that 12 to 13, and depending on what night of the week we meet, sometimes there's 7 or 8 people there, so we're just trying to get those things going again for the year.
Are we starting to roll off old members?
No. Well, that's too.
Yeah, we were talking, you know, do we want to have limits on that committee or not? And we talked about how, you know, it does take a couple years for you to get comfortable with understanding that 5-year
right.
forecast. So so that's something that Doug and Cindy and Diane and I will be talking about, and then we're supposed to kind of present that to the committee.
I think they're pushing for 9 years. It did get brought up.
Wow.
I don't think anybody was pushing.
You want to do it for 9.
No. I don't think so.
If we're going to go out for new members again, are we going to kind of do it like we did the last time, just kind of open it up and say, hey, you know, we had a list of people the last time, too.
Yeah.
I think that's what we need to talk about.
Yeah, because I just sent out an email to the, you know, we put that email blast out and said, uh-huh. would you want to be on the...
Right, what's your background?
And I think we got like 90 something.
Oh, that's right.
We got a bunch of people.
Well, we did a bunch of subcommittees then, so I don't know how many we had in total involved in that.
There was a bunch of people at one point.
And that was really a nice way of figuring out who was really invested in showing up and stuff.
Right.
So this time around, when we picked new members, they actually showed up to meetings. I mean, usually you have to pick 3 to get 1 to show up on a regular basis. This is the nature of the type.
Right. No, I think your list looks very good.
I think that's one of the fears of cycling people off. People are willing to show up
yes.
and have that knowledge.
Right. Because I think they've given us, they put a lot of thought into things that have come before us.
Well, it's always nice to have that experience, too, a little bit, to see, you know, what's happened in the past.
Right.
And kind of.
We'd
and
really like
talk,
to get them to a point where we're not always getting them up to speed so they know
right.
the forecast, they know our comprehensive financial plan pretty well. So then when we do talk to them about strategic planning or some of those things that they mm-hmm. they have a context that they start with.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So.
All right.
That's it.
Great. Thank you. And then you're looking for feedback. If anybody has any additional feedback, just shoot you an email.
Yep.
Great. Was there anybody on the public participation list? Nope. Okay. I'll just ask, since there are so many of you out here, if there anybody who would like to address the board portion of the meeting? Not? All right. Then we are going to move on. Next up, I need a motion to approve the minutes from our August 15th, 2013 meeting, please.
Second.
Moved and second. Was there any discussion about that? Hearing none, then, can I get a roll call, please?
Mrs. Greer, yes. Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Baby?
Yes.
Mr. Devine?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve 8.1, the Treasurer CFO action items, please.
Moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Cindy, you have anything on there you'd like to discuss?
No, I gave you an updated permanent appropriation list somehow. I don't know what happened. Having bugs in my computer, I think.
Okay.
So.
But you must look them on today, too.
We've had some funky things going on in our computers at the office and stuff, so that's what I'm thinking is probably part of it. So I updated that, and it's all the same. I've added that $250,000 for the building fund due to the fact that we need to be able to appropriate so we can spend to fix up the restrooms and things here for the YMCA to use our facility, so that's part of that. So that's a legitimate expense. Expense out of that account. All the others are the same. That's it.
Is there any questions, comments? Hearing none, then, can I get a roll call, please?
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mrs. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Mr. Mrs. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Raven?
Yes. Okay, motion carried. All right. Next up, I need a motion to approve the resolution accepting the rates and amounts as submitted.
So moved.
Second. Moved and second. Cindy, you have one.
These are basically our voted rates. They are not effective rates. So they're the voted rates that just need to be approved.
They're the voted rates?
They're the voted rates, yeah. And they give you the effective amount, but it's the voted rates. Just the law.
Oh, I see. So I get what you're saying. So
we—that's easy.
Yeah, it looks really.
So it makes no sense, right? Yeah. So when you look at the two numbers, you're like, "How did they get up to this dollar amount?"
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, the first time I've ever done this, I looked at them. I'm like, "These don't make any sense." So I called the county auditor. They said, "No, we have to give you the voted rates, and then but we figured on the effective." They really don't have the effective amounts yet. I mean, they've just now sent them to the Department of Taxation. Department of Taxation sets your effective rates, so they probably won't get set until probably late December.
So what's the thing we vote on that determines how much they collect for the bonds?
Right here.
This.
It can be changed during between now and the end of
so
the year.
So that's more than just the voted rates, right? We're talking about what they're going to be collecting, how much we're asking for.
Yeah. On bonds, once they set a rate, then that they consider that the voted rate.
It's a fixed sum.
It's a fixed sum levy, so that's why they've set it at those. So, yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes. I agree with you, Doug. It does not make any sense. There are several laws like that, but that's one of them.
Okie dokie.
But the big point is we can change these things.
Yes.
But we have to do it before the end of the year.
Right. Yes.
Is that before December 31st or before December 1st?
She would like them before December 1st, I would say, because of setting the tax bill, doing the tax bill.
Part of our work session discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so if you're being kind, it's December 1st, but what's the drop dead date?
31st, then.
Okay.
That's gotcha. All right, any other questions? Hearing none, then, can I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Lasker?
Yes.
Mr. Bowers?
Yes.
Mr. Raby?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Devine?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve the superintendent items 10-1, 10-2, and 10-3, please.
So moved.
I will second that. Move and second. Mr. Culp, you have any discussion on these items, please?
The only thing I'd mention briefly is one of those is the sixth grade camp that Creekview attends, which is always a lifelong memory for the sixth graders. I mentioned Steve Ader has given the district a lot of great service and is a very kind and gentle man. I've enjoyed getting to know him, and his retirement letter is in there. So. FFA is traveling to Louisville, Kentucky for the national convention, as well as, I believe, Maine, and they're doing that as part of their own cost. They're absorbing those as part of what they do. So that's all I have to say.
Great. Was there any questions, comments?
Well, I just, again, sometimes you look at some of these names in there, and under the home instruction, I was kind of excited to see Tim Kinsey and McNeese, several names that are, you know, past teachers and well-respected.
Absolutely. And
great for our kids.
Yep. I just wanted to comment on, I think the whole town has volunteered.
Our
schools. That list was.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes. Missy Hackett must have at least half the town at our school.
I agree. I got a big star by my
fourth. It's like, wow, Missy's got a lot of.
I think that just speaks volumes about about our community and having the support of our schools. So,
I agree. It is.
All right, any further comments?
And, well, just the FFA trip to Louisville. I mean, I know that's, isn't that where Bill Keck is going to be honored with his national award?
Yes.
And we will be recognizing him next month, I believe.
Okay. Yes.
And the FFA team. I know they've, the horse management program, or equine management is just, congrats to them.
About that in, like, farm and dairy. You can get some videos from this.
Awesome. So on the substitute home instructors, do they all get paid the same rate?
It's a set rate. I think it's $21 an hour. Yeah.
And we used to have, we used to put that on for the rate.
Yeah. I don't think we put that separate on it, just the regular.
It's just part of the schedule, right?
Yeah, schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, any other questions? Hearing none, then can I get a roll call, please?
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mr. Mady.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lasseter.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes. Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve the supplemental contracts as presented, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Any discussion? All right. Hearing none, then, can I get a roll call, please? If you're ready.
Mr. Lasseter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mady.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Same.
Okay, motion carries. All right, before we go into executive session, then I'll just go around the table for any final comments. Mrs. Powers.
Just wanted to comment on our, Diane and I were going to have our safety drug committee. We had kind of a miscommunication. We've had two different dates. So we will be picking back up on that in October. And we have already been approached by West Central to bring that play in. And so I'm going to make a suggestion. Maybe they even come in and do it for us as a board.
Mm-hmm. But how long does that take?
It would probably be, or we could even, as a board, go to one of them.
Right. I'm just trying to make sure.
You know. Right. And I can get an idea that, you know, it's not real long, but it is definitely worth seeing. So we can organize it that maybe we can go as a team and see it, or
sure,
you know, have them do it after one of our board, even a shorter version of it. Or mm-hmm. But we've got that, and then we've got Reggie, I think, that wants to come back again. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think this is now the time maybe to start setting some things up in the spring to get them booked.
Gotcha.
So, and that's it. And except that it's exciting for being number 23 out of 600. I agree mm-hmm. with that. And,
absolutely.
A lot of positive things, so it's just very exciting being a part of it right now.
Very good. Mr. Lasseter.
I would just say that, you know, how one of the points that was made about how impressive our report card was, given the fact that this is the first year it's been out, and yet the focus is in on how do we do better, and I think this just says a lot. And just looking at everything that's presented today, including the stuff with this club sports and the YMCA, just how well people work internally and with the community, and the collaboration that goes on there. It's just, it is very exciting. It's going to be, I only got a few more months left, so, but I'm going to see in the cheap seats.
That means he's going to be here hounding us.
Yeah. No, I'm at home.
Yeah.
Okay. Doing it on the audio.
Yeah, there you go.
We're going to see you sneaking in the back doors.
Ms. Greer.
Okay, so what I would like to comment on, I attended Bunzold's curriculum night. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've ever done that, if they had it long ago when your children were in school, but it is such a fantastic program. You go through your child's schedule, spend like 10 minutes or so with each teacher, and they tell you about what they're doing mm-hmm. and whether or not your child's a hooligan or not, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was just such a good experience to actually get to spend that much time because, you know, once your kids get to that age, you're not in the building, right. You know, doing much. You no longer have PTOs and that kind of thing. So it was just a really nice experience. They had two different time slots, so, you know, people who might work different schedules could actually go and enjoy the whole thing. So it was wonderful.
Very good. Yeah. Thank you. Ms. Devine.
Well, I can just piggyback on that because Jeff and I visited Bunzold, yeah. And I would just say that was really exciting to go in there. And I think what stood out to me was listening to how excited the teachers were.
Oh my
you go
gosh.
Into those classrooms and just some of the things that they're trying maybe for the first time this year, things that they picked up over the summer when they went to different seminars. You know, I mean, they're just so committed to helping our students. So.
I don't think you could walk into any of those classrooms and see someone standing there lecturing to those kids, and it's just not the way. It wasn't, you know, when we were at school, that's the way they did it. But anymore, there's a lot of interaction.
Jeff was trying to answer the question.
I was so close on that 8th grade math question. I was.
I also, the teacher, do you remember?
Huh?
Who was the teacher?
It was a math teacher.
Brooke.
Oh yeah.
Young.
Yes,
yeah.
Brooke Young.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Did you ever answer it?
I wasn't allowed, but I wanted to write it down.
Yeah. And then I also wanted to thank Steve Ader for his service, because I know how committed he and his wife Jane have been to our, and continue to be to our school district. So
absolutely. So,
and yeah, go Monarchs.
Yeah. Mr. Cole, do you have any closing comments?
I don't. Just thank you for allowing me to do this today. It's been
thank
quite
you.
An experience.
You did an awesome job.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah. Cindy, anything? I would just close out, and I would say it is an incredibly exciting time to be part of the district. And as I look at that report card, and then I think about the year that we went through as a district, that to me adds so much more weight to what you know, what our people have done, you know, for our students, no matter what, you know, the weather is outside, if you will. It would be very fortunate for our community, if I had kids back in school again, you know, what an opportunity for those kids to be in these schools at this time, to be honest. So
it's exciting.
We're doing amazing things here. Our collaborations with our partners in the community are just continuing to flourish and grow. You know, as I sit at the chamber and I talk to, you know, our business folks, you know, and talk about things that we can do together, it's incredible. So it's a very exciting time to be here, to be honest with you. It sure beats where we were a year ago. So so with that, I need a motion to move into executive session then.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Okay, we are in executive session at 8:52. And we are going to move across the hall into the office.
All right.
Okay. So we don't have to kick everybody out.
Okay.
I guess we can stay in here. We can ask you guys to leave if you want.
How long do you think we'll be in the session?
I would say half hour.
Yes.
We'll go across the way. We'll just go across the way.
That's fine.
Okay.
Just leave it alone.
You're just leaving it here?
Yeah. I don't think anybody will take it. Hey, Amy, are you staying?
I thought you were talking to me. I'm like, yeah.
No, not yet.
I think I have to. Oh.